I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is showtime. Please welcome the team of the Fulhamish podcast.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to the Fulhamish podcast. Merry Christmas to every single Fulham fan out there. My name is Jack Collins, and I will be your host today. And joining me, plenty of Christmas spirit, Mr. Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
Mr. Cameron Ramsey.
Ho, ho, ho.
And, of course, Lydia Campbell.
Good evening.
Good evening. How are we all? How are we feeling? How was your Christmas, Lydia?
Yeah, very good, very good. Very fortunate to get home, so that's always a bonus. But I'm beginning to see what my life would be like as an only child. Because no one else is home, it's me and my parents, but it's we're surviving so far.
Yeah, well, it's slowly for all of us, I think. Cam, how did you get on?
It was all right, man. Edward Scissorhands and a load of beer and gammon, so what can I say? It was normal, to be fair.
Yeah, that sounds like every day for you. Never mind Christmas. And Dom, I saw you were making something a little bit different.
Yeah, the Cantonese roast duck came in. I was like, considering it's only me and my parents, I was like, no, we're making something different. Something like, because I don't rate turkey. I think it's such a pointless meat. Like, I just don't get it. So yes, you whack the Cantonese roast duck in, which actually wasn't actually that complicated. Really, it was just cutting it the night before. Letting it dry and then cooking it the next day. I'd obviously dim sum for starters because, you know, what else you're going to have?
You're going to have on Christmas, he says.
Yeah, exactly. And, but, you know, to be fair, I was battered by lunchtime anyway. So it wasn't too, I was doing fine just on the Changs and then the champagne, then the champagne came out and it was game over.
Right. Well, that was pretty much Christmas in a nutshell, wasn't it? And it's a strange one for everyone, but Fulham didn't seem to be too hungover from things. And it was a game against Saints that we were a little bit worried about. And turns out maybe perhaps something we should have got more than we did. So, Dominic, should we start with some free word reviews?
Yeah, I'm going to Instagram for today. So we seem to go on Twitter recently. The first one is Ruben Kostas Cheek from Harry Drew. Obviously, there's a lot of chat about Ruben Kostas Cheek and what does he actually offer this Fulham side. You got K Martin with VAR as a Saint, obviously with the two disallowed goals, which, to be honest, I thought both looked offside from watching them live anyway. But thankfully, obviously, the second one got dragged back out. Obviously, Cav can't head from Aaron Lamb because that, I don't actually understand how he put that header so high and wide. And we have Ishan MS with Saint exactly striking.
Saint exactly striking. Is that it? And like, Cam, let's start there. It does seem like Fulham, if you'd offered us, shall we say, Fulham getting unbeaten for four games at the start of the season, a lot of people would have bitten your hand off for it, right? But the flip of that is we seem to be a little bit toothless up top. What's your kind of overall take on everything?
Well, I think, you know, the games that we've had recently, we obviously were unlucky not to get the win against Liverpool. I think we were robbed of that. The victory up at the King Power against Leicester was a fantastic performance all round from everybody. The draw against Newcastle, once again, we were a bit hard done by, you know, officiating and the decision-making there. But I like to think that we've actually performed rather well. I think we've got ourselves a solid foundation now defensively that we can build on. But yeah, going forward, we've got no firepower whatsoever and we just seem to be a little bit outfought in terms of chance creation. We're quite easy to contain and I just think there needs to be a little bit more of impetus going forward and a bit more creation. But where does that come from? And that's a conundrum that we're faced with.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I mean, Lids, I can imagine that's something you agree with. What was your take on yesterday's game?
Yeah, I mean, yesterday I think the subs had to be brought on a lot earlier. That's my main, you know, takeaway from it. You know, I agree that we're much better at the back. I can't remember probably against Man City was the last time we've conceded from open play. You know, there hasn't been a penalty. You know, I don't know whether that's actually a bad thing in a way because we keep giving away pens. But I think moving forward, you know, at the top side of the pitch, there is just something massively missing at the minute. And I don't know what we actually do to sort that, when considering we'll have Alexander Mitrovic on the bench, but not fitting that style. I'm not really sure what Scott has to do, really.
Dom, I want to talk about the Mitrovic thing in kind of more detail later down the line. We've got a lot of questions about it. I think it's something we can discuss a kind of holistic whole. Yesterday, it did seem that Fulham were a little bit stodgy. There wasn't much created. Obviously, the chance for Anguissa in the first half, the chance for Cavaleiro in the second. But ultimately, aside from that, it wasn't a high kind of moment in terms of what we were creating, but the defense does look excellent. And I think I want to start with the positives. I want to start with the fact that we look, for the first time in a long time, solid, you know, and stable at the back, which is, you know, it's nice to see.
Yeah, the last time we were probably this strong defensive, maybe towards the latter end of the Mark Hughes season potentially, or beginning of Martin Jol reign. But apart from that, we were still sort of outscoring opponents towards the end of our Premier League reign. And I'd much rather have the problems we're facing now than the problems we had 2 years ago. I'd much rather be attacking being our potential downfall in a moment compared to our defence than it was 2 years ago. I think it's potentially a lot easier to fix than it is when it comes to your defence, because we have got players in the team who can score goals. It's just getting them, you know, in the right system to score the goals they can. I think one thing that we could potentially see a difference is when Ken Etete comes back, and we could see Bobby Decadova read through the middle in this counter-attacking system, which might work slightly better. But yeah, I think what happened was really is Southampton knew that Lookman is our main attacking threat going forward, and he was double or triple man marked every single time he was close to getting the ball. And, you know, Loftus-Cheek hasn't really offered much since he's come in. Cavaleiro, although he broke our penalty duct, I think that's the only goal he scored for us in his last 30 games or something crazy like that. So I think, obviously, going forward, we do need to improve, but I'm happy where we are at the moment, that we have shored up at the back, and I think goals will come, because I think either we've got players who can score, and we've got this January transfer window here where we could bring in someone who could, you know, with a bit of pace up top, who's got an eye for goal, who could score for us. And I think yeah, a point against Southampton, although it is disappointing to an extent, you've got to look at their away record, their record against recently promoted teams. I know they're with three or four of their key assets, so we should have probably taken advantage of that. But, you know, as we're playing the likes of Burnley, Brighton and West Brom all before the end of January. And, you know, come February the 1st, we really could be looking in a much better position. We could actually look at these four games here, these four draws, actually, that it just kept the momentum going. I think that's one point you got to look at, is although it's disappointing not to have won like at Newcastle and against Southampton yesterday, and even arguably to an extent against Liverpool, it's for us, I think it's just keeping that momentum going. And I think that's been the best thing about this run, despite the lack of goals.
Yeah, I was going to come on to this, Cam. And there's a kind of question in the mix, that is it better to kind of draw three games on the trot or lose two and win one? I mean, it's the same amount of points. So, but it does give you some sort of consistency.
Well, that's exactly it. At least we are consistent in the fact that we're picking up these points. And towards the end of the season, they all pay dividends. We've covered this before. Especially in the Premier League and the fight that we're in, you can't necessarily put a price on these points and draws that we're currently faced with, because imagine losing these four games of which we picked up points in, we'd be cast away, we'd be completely cut off from, you know, the rest of the chasing pack. And I'd like to think that we've really shown some resolve, and we've gelled as a team the last couple of weeks. And It is just the old same situation at the moment. We just can't seem to buy a goal, but I'm sure it will come. I mean, Dom said perfectly well that we do have players that can score quite freely when they're firing on all cylinders and full of confidence and actually placing us in the right position on the pitch. But it's just making sure that the players that we have at our disposal are deployed in the right way. And it just goes to show, with a player like Decordova Reed, for example, I know we've got Ken Etete coming back in hopefully very soon, but he's been a real revelation since moving to that strange right wing back kind of right wing position, where the adaptability is there. He's still our top scorer as well, and it just goes to show the effort within the squad, that we have players that want to try hard regardless of where they're played and deployed on a weekly basis. And I'd much rather us have drawn these four games and, you know, dropped maybe drop maybe 3 points in a game, I don't know, for example, against Newcastle, where we could have grabbed a point at the end and we could have let it slip and that would have really deflated us. So it's something to build on, it's something to work with, and there's no harm in picking up a hard-earned point.
No, for sure. And Leeds, kind of in that kind of regard, there's something about the way that Fulham line up at the moment that is obviously giving us a little bit more sustainability in terms of our defensive output. And we're seeing what Bobby Reid is bringing in that wing-back role. I've called him a Swiss Army knife in the past. I think it's very fitting in terms of what he brings and is able to bring in those different capacities. You know, someone who was an 8 and then became a 9 and now has the kind of defensive work rate to get up and down that side. But there is the kind of counterpunch in that regard, that when you look at the position maps and stuff from yesterday, you see that he played mostly in the same way from right back or right wing back as Anthony Robinson did. And that probably does hold us back in an attacking sense a little bit, because it shows us that, you know, they're not playing a 4-2-3-1 as it sometimes build. It is very much a 5 at the back, and we're lacking offensively because of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the key things that Bobby Decore Reid has kind of changed his game, is that he has become more defensive. Now, maybe that's just because that's the role he's been asked to play at the minute. But naturally, when he's playing in that position, he isn't going to have any sort of impact on the attacking side of the pitch. And that's understandable. I wouldn't change it at the minute. I wouldn't change what, you know, there's been a few calls on Twitter to have Bobby through the middle. I wouldn't be doing that until, I think it was, as Dom says, you know, when Kenny Tete's back. I think, you know, we're going to have to kind of maybe suck it up a little bit at the minute, you know, because at the start of the season, our defensive record was so, so bad. It was diabolical. And at the end of the day, that is the thing that we needed to fix. We didn't need to fix our, you know, how we were going forward. But now that we have this kind of solid base, that's when we're going to have to try and fix now that side of the pitch. I think it's understandable that we're scoring less goals at the minute, but I think the key thing here was that we sorted out the defence, which we seem to have done. So maybe January is going to be the key for to kind of fix that kind of offensive mindset of how we're setting up at the minute.
Yeah, I mean, and it comes on to the big question, Dom: do we need to invest now in January? Because, you know, there's a lot of talk about outgoings and the fact that Fulham have spent a fair bit, and whatever we do here needs to be sustainable. You know, it can't be a short-term fix, it feels.
Yeah, and I was talking about this with my mates earlier about sort of what sort of player should you be looking to get in if we're looking for an attacker in this, obviously, January transfer window, which I think we will. I mean, players that spring to, obviously, there was links and the rumours to Josh King in the previous window, which would be a good player to bring in. I think it needs to be someone in that sort of mould, definitely a mobile striker up top. Obviously, another player we're not necessarily linked with, but an interesting talking point is obviously Adam Armstrong at Blackburn, former Newcastle striker, who's obviously, I think he's the second top goal scorer in the Championship at the moment. And, you know, that would be a wise investment in case, worst case scenario, we were to go down. We know we've got a Championship-ready striker there, but also a player who will want to prove himself in the Premier League. And then, you know, if you're going by what Scott Parker said, it looks like we're only going to be in the loan market for a player. And then who does that limit you to? Is it someone like how long are we going to wait until the Dwight Gayle rumours start again?
Yeah.
they're already back.
Yeah, but like for me, I'm interested to see how they invest, because investment is clearly needed. I think no team can afford to not invest in their squad. But I do think a mobile striker going forward is going to be key. And obviously, if it was me, I'd like to see Josh King in, just because I think he would offer us something different. And we know he can score goals in the Premier League. I know he wasn't quite up to speed last season, but I think in seasons previous, you've seen what quality he can offer. And so I think that's where we'll be looking to invest. And if we could choose one other position, I would actually be looking at a wide player as well. I mean, it's probably a bit above our reach, but even looking at someone like Damari Gray at Leicester, like someone of his ability, I think, could really change this team. But he's obviously linked with bigger teams than us, so it could be quite hard to get him in. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do. Are they looking to get players in on a permanent deal, or will they be looking for a more sustainable option, such as someone like an Adam Armstrong?
Yeah, I mean, look, it's one that keeps coming up, but I'd be very surprised if we can get Adam Armstrong on any sort of sensible money, you know, this January, considering how well he's playing, but also, you know, where we are and where Blackburn are. It's always a little bit kind of up and down to pick someone from a promotion contender to go to someone who's struggling to play to stay in the Premier League, right? It's a gamble that a lot of players aren't willing to take. So there's that element. And we can come on a little bit more to this towards the end of the show. But I mean, just to go back to Southampton very briefly and just a touch maybe for the, you know, the defence and for Joachim Anderson in particular, Cam. You know, there's two very tight offside calls that denied Southampton two goals. And while a lot of people were saying that it was lucky and they were, you know, Fulham were rode their luck a little bit, which you can say, there was also a sense that we were stepping up at the right times, pulling the offside lines in the right times. And then if you look at that, you think, how important was Joachim Anderson coming back in and being able to play in that game?
Well, definitely. Joachim Anderson, he's made a huge difference to the way that we execute our defensive responsibilities. He's a born leader. He commands his defence, keeps them all in check as well. And he's constantly scanning to make sure that we're all basically in one straight line across the back four without any weird kind of, you know, waves going across with players kind of dropping into areas they shouldn't. Especially Olerena, who I think's actually he's gotten himself into, you know, he just seems to be someone who switched on a lot more now. And that is down to the people that he's next to. And, you know, it was very tight. It wasn't necessarily, you know, something that was clear and obvious. I don't think so anyway. But it's down to the leadership qualities that we have at the back now. And I think yesterday we would have struggled without Anderson at the heart of our defence, because he's building a great relationship with Tosin as well, who has come on absolutely fantastically well since leaving Manchester City. He's taken an opportunity in the Premier League at a club which was going to struggle. He knew that he was going to be pressed up against the wall as well, and he's going to be tested, his credentials, but he's got someone next to him that, you know, they communicate well, and they both work as a pair. One sticks, one twists, one attacks and one drops off, and it's proven beneficial now, and we're reaping the rewards of that defensively. So Southampton, they tried to break us down. You know, you had Shane Long using his quote experience. I don't really know how that works when you're drawing fouls, to be quite honest with you, but they tried to split the lines, they tried to break us down, but we were resolute, and we made it very, very difficult for them to operate between the gaps and the lines. And it's testament to the lads that we brought in. And we've got to remember that the whole back three with the wing backs is all new. It's never been tried and tested before at this level before this season, really. And they've all connected and gelled fantastically well. And you've got to put that down to the training and all the hard work that's gone in at Motspur Park, and it's starting to come to fruition on the pitch. So great. And it was excellent yesterday again defensively.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's it, isn't it? We feels like the defences are, you know, getting stronger, and that in itself is something to build off, and that's what we go to. And there's plenty of questions, so we'll get on to them actually after the break.
This is an advertisement for BetterHelp, a portal for finding online therapy. How's your social battery right now? If you feel a bit drained or lacking enthusiasm to meet all the social commitments in your life, then that can be a totally normal thing, especially with things picking up as we head out of winter. I know that pretty frequently a weekend just doing a few chores and watching the football was about the limit of my energy resources. But therapy can be a place to help you gain the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your batteries. Contrary to popular belief, therapy isn't just for those who have experienced major trauma. The overall goal is to empower you to be the best version of yourself. And if therapy is something you've considered, then why not give BetterHelp a try? BetterHelp is entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. They'll match you with a UK mental health professional with a wide variety of expertise. There's no referral needed, and you can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge, giving you complete control over the whole experience. Fulhamish listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/fulhamish. That's betterhelp.com/fulhamish.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal. Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast. My name is Jack Collins. I'm joined by Dom Betts.
Hello, hello.
Cam Ramsey.
Evening.
And Lydia Campbell.
Good evening.
And good evening to you all. And we continue now. There's some questions. And this one we got is an email from Alex Jones. He says, long-time listener, first-time emailer. Is Scott Parker a better Premier League manager than a Championship manager? Dom, I'll start with you here.
Yeah, I've mentioned this a lot of times. I think, yes. I think he does a lot better when not... Well, we saw in Champions, maybe in one-off games, you know, the game of at home to Leeds, obviously in the playoffs away at Cardiff and in the playoff final. I think he deals a lot better either in particular situations or when Fulham are maybe expected to be the underdog or have less of the ball. I think his tactical setups work a lot better in this way. So it's maybe not he's a better Championship manager than a Premier League manager or vice versa. I just think in the situation we are in now suits his managerial skill set. And if you look at even what he was like as a player, just suits him a lot more. I don't think dominating the ball and, you know, being one of the better teams in the league at the moment in his skill set. Obviously, he's a very young manager. He is essentially learning on the job, which we have seen because he's made early mistakes and we've learned from them. But I would say his managerial skill set, as I mentioned, is definitely more suited to the situation we are in now as opposed to the one we were going out from the Premier League and trying to get back into it.
Cam?
Yeah, I agree. I think he reacts well under pressure. And like Dom says, as a player, he usually played for teams other than, of course, Tottenham, his time at Chelsea, where he was always the underdog and he had to lead by example. And he's doing that from a technical area, definitely. And I just think he adapts his managerial nous quite well to situations where we may be put under pressure and tested relentlessly. And it's proven this season, at least in the last couple of games.
Yeah, I think that is fair enough. In terms of this, you know, coming away from the style, though, a bit, Liz, is this kind of where he's put his stamp on this squad and be like, right, we don't have to play in a way that we don't want to necessarily. We're not expected to, you know, to push on. And does that suit his temperament? Because what he is, you know, seemingly good at, Lids, is learning from his mistakes, but also being an inspiration. People talk about how good a manager he is to work for in terms of what he can say. And I guess these are experiences, these relegation scraps, these, you know, battles are something that he has far more experience of than actually going for the top spots.
Yeah, I think he's much better as an underdog, and I think that's kind of shown already this season from what he's changed from the start of the season to where we are now. Whereas when you're fighting at the top of the league, like we were trying to do last season, you know, we weren't blowing teams away like, you know, our fans wanted us to. We weren't doing it. But the games that we did well in were the games where we were desperately, desperately in need of points. And as you say, I think that comes from his kind of motivational, inspirational side of him that you know, we can even see from some of his post-match interviews. He's the kind of player, he's the kind of manager I think I would want to play for because of what he says and how he gets people up for things. But I do think that works better at the minute as an underdog, as the team who everyone expects to win.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. We better get on to Mitrovic because the questions are heavily skewed in favour of the big man. And we'll start with John Harkness. He says, do we sell Mitrovic? We're doing him a disservice bringing him in on the 80th minute. He deserves better. And is Parker playing games with him? Cam, I'll come to you here first.
Well, no, I don't think selling him is the right answer at all. I mean, he offers a different dimension when we need a big target man to go to. I mean, I agree that he should have come on a lot earlier, especially if we were using the channels in the way we did to try and get crosses into the box and to have a natural finisher there. I mean, we've already touched on it already. If Caballero could header properly, then we may well have actually found ourselves 1-0 up. But if that was Mitrovic in that situation, and I know that you said it yesterday or the day before, Jack, of course, where he would never have actually gotten in that position because he's just not mobile enough. But in an ideal world, if he was placed in that position unmarked, he would have definitely made something happen or at least worked the target. I just think we're trying to add a new string to our bow In terms of the way that we approach games. And long were the days where we just look as Mitrovic as a sole kind of get out target man. We need to try and implement something a bit deeper in terms of the way that we move forward. We're not doing it at the moment, but no, I mean, I'm sure Mitrovic can adapt his game as well. He's not necessarily just a one trick pony. He can make things happen. He can turn on the box. He can score from anywhere, really. Once he gets his head down, and he works hard. I just think he's not quite there at the moment, but no, so selling him is definitely not an option. No way.
I wanted to come onto this, Liz, because there is an element here where when he's come on recently, I think he looks leaner. He looks, you know, a little bit more hungry in that regard. And when he did come on yesterday, he had a snapshot, a goal. We saw a shot. And Daniel at Read All Over asked, how can he possibly not be starting? There were so many times we're in decent crossing positions and had nobody in the box. We're really struggling to finish our chances. And this is, I think, the key point. He says, surely it's pointless having the extra pace if nobody can finish the chances off.
Yeah, I mean, and that's a very good point. And I think when Robinson put that ball in for Cav, you could see him look up and say, oh, there's, you know, someone in the box, I'm going to get this cross in mega early. You know, people are saying, well, Mitrovic wouldn't have been there. But then the cross wouldn't have been played yet. The cross just would have been delayed for me. And, you know, then we might have had that chance. I think the key is finding the right balance at the minute. We haven't found it yet, clearly, but I think we can. I think, you know, one of the first things Mitchell did when he came on yesterday was jump up around the halfway line, win a ball, and give it straight to Robinson, who was away down the wing. You know, Cav doesn't do that. Cav, you know, that's not his kind of game at all. So while we need to find, you know, we need someone a little bit, maybe a bit more mobile than Mitrovic, maybe the answer is to have Mitrovic alongside someone a bit more mobile. But unfortunately, it might just mean that we need to kind of change our lineup a little bit, or the way we start. And I'm not quite sure Parker's willing to do that at the minute.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. I mean, Dom, I haven't been the biggest Cav fanboy for a long time, right? I think he's a little bit wasteful. I think that in terms of what he offers, you know, while his work rate is strong, he's been lacking. But I actually think he's done all right in the last couple of games. You know, he's held on the ball well. He's got in the middle. He's got behind the defender, and he's held it up reasonably well. Not necessarily in the same way that a Mitrovic would. You know, it's not off the chest and hold, but, you know, he takes the ball down, he goes back, he checks on himself, and he tends to beat a player and lay it off. And actually, in that regard, has he done enough to warrant being dropped? You know, I don't think he's done, you know, loads in those things, but I also don't think he's been bad enough to be like, you have to drop him now.
Yeah, I don't think it's simply a fact of, oh, Cav's not scoring, we'll replace him with a goal-scoring Mitrovic, and that's that. I don't think it's ever going to work in that way, because this system's been created for players who isn't based around Mitrovic's skill set. That's why this system has worked so well, and I don't think, you know, just because we're not scoring goals right now doesn't mean this system should be totally scrapped and we bring in Mitrovic and play a completely different way. I think it's about trying to fit in Mitrovic into this team, because he is the main goal-scoring threat in this side. And we saw that in since he's joined the club, even on loan from Newcastle United in the second half of 17-18. So I think, you know, Cavalero's done the job he's needed to do, obviously apart from putting the ball in the back of the net. But I mean, in regard to him and Lookman being both sort of a quick player up top, I think it works. I would want to see Mitrovic in against Spurs, because I think Spurs' centre-backs are there to be got at, especially, you know, I think Alderweireld, although he's how good of a centre-back he is, I think due to his age now, he is there to be got at. And if Mitrovic can hold it up and allow the likes of Reed, Lookman and Robinson to really damage Spurs in behind, then we could cause them some issues. But I think that it's not as simple as just bringing Mitrovic into the side and we'll score goals. I don't. We saw that against Newcastle. It's not just going to work like that. But I do think we do need to work out a way to fit Mitrovic into this team because of the threat he is going forward for us. But I don't. It's going to be something that happens over time. It's not going to be something that just happens straight away, because as we've been talking about in this in the way this system is, it's been suited to players more, you know, with pace on the counter attack. So I think you're just going to have to give it time, because yes, the defense is very sudden, and it's going to stay like that. But Mitrovic and Kearney do have a part to play here, and it's going to be just slowly bending them into the team, so we don't have to force any major changes to the tactical setup.
Yeah, and that's it. And it goes back to what we were talking about in the first half of this show, doesn't it? When we were talking about the defensive solidity, and you know, all of that does start to a point at the front. You know, it's the pressing game, and it's the different elements that all of those players can bring when they drop in, which is not something you'd perhaps ask as much of an Alexander Mitrovic. But I mean, Kaz Banks makes the very valid point that given that Mitrovic has been pivotal to us the last couple of seasons, he deserves a chance to prove himself rather than be given scraps in the last few minutes. And I think that's fair, Cam. I don't think it's right to be giving Mitrovic 7 minutes at the end of a game. And look, we don't know the exact ins and outs of his fitness, and the fact that I think he is getting back to that kind of leaner shape suggests to me that maybe Scott has asked him to, you know, to work on that element of things in order for him to fit into this system. And maybe that's something he's playing at, but at the moment he isn't quite right for that 90-minute role.
No, correct. And he obviously started the game against Newcastle, hopefully to make an impact against a former employer, but it didn't quite happen for him. And it proved that he was quite easily dealt with. And it's been a couple of weeks since then. And obviously it's a bit of a difficult period for even players to get themselves 100% physically fit, because, you know, with families, you've got festivities going on, despite the fact we're in, you know, COVID and such. Your mind might be elsewhere, and that might be the fact for Mitrovic. You don't know what's going along in his personal life that might have affected his performances recently. And, you know, I'm not speculating on anything at all there. It's just how it naturally could be. But, yeah, I think Kaz is completely correct. You can't necessarily have a player of, you know, Mitrovic's prowess and expect him to be happy with coming on with 10 minutes to go and saying, yeah, go on, make things happen, man, because there is no ammunition for him there to actually work with. And that's something that we've struggled with for quite a long time now. I mean, the only game that we actually really looked like getting him into any real scoring positions was away at Leeds, where, of course, he scored 2 goals and looked a threat. But since then, it's been really, you know, sporadic the way that he's been playing. And, you know, even for a player like Mitrovic, who seems to be such a massive, you know, a massive personality within the squad, he still has to have confidence in his game and his ability. And, yeah, I'm sure Scott's taken him to one side the last couple of weeks. He's let him know that he's still very much a part of our plans, and it's just shoehorning him in the right capacity. And I'm sure now that he's seemingly getting himself back to a physical peak, he can find an extra gear, potentially pick up the pace a little bit more going forward, and be a little bit sharper on the ball to incorporate players a bit more. And we'll see the Mitrovic of which we expect to see, and which we know that someone who bags goals, guarantees goals, and will make things happen.
Yeah, absolutely, for sure. I mean, let's move it on to someone else who's perhaps we're not getting the best out of right now. Gary Lids asks, how do we get the best out of Loftus-Cheek, or is this as good as he gets? And it feels tricky at the moment. It feels like there's a player in there, as Cam wrote in his five thoughts, but we're just not seeing it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a case of this being the best that we can get out of him. I think the problem is where he's playing at the minute. I think, you know, it doesn't suit him at all. You know, he looks nervous. He's when he does drop back to try and win the ball back, he ends up, you know, somehow losing it or you know, causing us more problems. You know, that he seems to be a bit lost, and I get that Parker is asking him to play that. You know, he's asking him to change the kind of role that he's used to. But I just feel that he's had so many games so far to kind of try and fit that it just hasn't worked. For me, I think he shouldn't be playing in a top three the way he has been. It doesn't suit his game at all. Whenever we know that there is a very good player in there, I don't know whether it's a confidence thing, whether it's a fitness thing, whether it's the fact that, you know, he barely had any he barely had any starts last season. I think was he at Palace last season? I'm not sure, but there's something not quite right at the minute, and him playing on the like right wing the way he seems to be at the minute is not working at all. And for me, I would rather have him out of the team altogether than trying to fit him in somewhere that just doesn't suit him at all. I think he's better kind of as a you know, in the midfield, you can see that he keeps trying to drop back, and that's because he's more used to that position. But because that's not the role he's supposed to be playing in, he's either getting in the way, or it's just kind of, it means that when we do win the ball back, he's not actually anywhere where he needs to be. For me, I think he needs out of the team at the minute until there's kind of a gap where he can fill in the midfield, which I don't think is going to happen. To be honest, I think he's kind of a bit of a waste of a domestic loan at the minute because we don't have the space for him. It's not that he's a bad player. It's not that he's, you know, been an absolute disaster. I just think the way we're playing at the minute, we have plenty of players in his favourite position who, for me, get on ahead of him. And, you know, if Scott is saying that we're only going to be in the loan market in the January window, to be honest, I'd be sending him back to Chelsea and bringing in someone who can play in that front three.
Yeah, I mean, Dom, I want to take your thoughts on this because we've seen Ruben Loftus-Cheek be excellent for various different things. And actually, I think perhaps where his best kind of explosion of form came was for the England under 21 team when back when Gareth Southgate was managing them and they, you know, played in that summer tournament. I think it was in Toulon.
Yeah, it was a tournament.
And he was playing behind kind of, well, in a various roles, but he was kind of sort of the second striker, a shadow striker, if you will. And I think he bagged like four goals in four games and an assist for what it's worth. And it just got me thinking that maybe the actual best way to get the best out of Ruben Loftus-Cheek is to play him with an Alexander Mitrovic and maybe you kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I think so. If we're looking at getting the best out of Loftus-Cheek and Mitrovic in the same side, I would tend to agree. Although the tactical setup would probably be asking a lot more on Bobby Reid and Robinson because you wouldn't have too much Y play as such. But I do think a more of a 3-4-1-2 as opposed to a 3-4-3. As if you have Loftus-Cheek just in behind and Mitrovic and Lookman. Yes, Lookman can sort of drift out wide, but actually if those two are actually a two-striker formation, you have Loftus-Cheek in behind them. But I think if we are going to get the best out of our players in this tactic, I think moving to that sort of system, especially if we get Kenny Tete back and you have him and Robinson as two, you know, bombing up and down wing backs, and then you could have, you know, even if Mitrovic isn't playing, you could have Reid and Lookman up top behind the likes of a Loftus-Cheek or a Kenny. But I do think the 3-4-3 for Loftus-Cheek isn't working because I know, you know, when he played at Palace, he was
it was
in more of a 4-4-2 situation. Yeah, so absolutely. It's completely different. But I do think that a 3-4-1-2 we're going to continue with this wing back sort of system is going to be the best way to get the best out of someone like Mitrovic, who can play with Adam Lookman and Loftus-Cheek or Tom Kenny, depending on who you play. But I think the issue for me with Loftus-Cheek, he just seems so slow and sluggish, and that's something you haven't associated with Loftus-Cheek throughout his career. You've seen it as quite a mobile, dynamic sort of attacker, and I don't know if his injury is finally keeping up with him, but for me, it's not like his technical ability that seems to be the thing that's off at the moment. It just seems to be, for me, he just seems so slow and sluggish off the ball. But I think if we are to get the best out of him, and we know there's a good player in there, we even saw that in the 2018 World Cup of England, obviously under Gareth Southgate, that, you know, there is a player there. But I do think playing him as a 10 is really if we're going to play this sort of system, is the only way to get the best out of him. But then, would you rather see someone like Tom Kearney playing in there? For me personally, I would. I don't think Kearney did necessarily. I don't think Kearney played well against Newcastle. I don't think he did necessarily any worse than Ruben Loftus-Cheek.
Yeah, no, I think you're probably about right. I don't think there was too much here between them in those performances. Cam, I mean, you put it in the article as I mentioned, and how do you feel you unlock him?
No, I completely agree with what Dom said, and that's more or less what I put down in the article. To get the best out of him, he needs to be just shadowing a main focal point. Just he can pick up the scraps and potentially play them in, and he can sort of just bounce off of Lair Enterprise up top as well. And against Southampton, you saw him, and Lydia said it as well, he sort of gravitated towards the flanks a lot, and he more or less impeded the way that we played up the flanks. I mean, I know he got the ball into the box to Lookman to lay up Zambo, but apart from that, he didn't really have an effect on the game, and he kind of counteracts his own abilities from being in that berth. So if he's going to be a feature in our system, which he definitely can be, like I say, I mean, there's a tremendous player in there with a hell of a work rate once he's up to speed. He needs to be playing just off a Mitrovic for me, and possibly, you know, if there's going to be a strike partnership up top, it would be Mitrovic and Lookman, because it's a little and large scenario really there, isn't it? Where you have Mitrovic to hold up the ball, potentially slip Ward, to potentially slip Lookman through, and I just think Ruben Loftus-Cheek, if he's drifting in and around the 18-yard box in those counter-attacks just to pick up the balls and potentially keep it moving or at least have a pop shot, it could work for him. But he's not necessarily a holding midfielder. He's not somebody that can be that deals well under high pressure. You saw it. He was getting crowded out by Diallo and Ward-Prowse quite comprehensively, and he just doesn't cope very well there. So yeah, he's a number 10, and that's the best we're going to get out of him. But I like TC in that position. So it's a dilemma that we have to deal with, and it's something that we're going to have to come to terms with in January in some way or another.
Yeah, absolutely. Another one for Scotty to have a serious think about. We're going to move on to taking a look at the Spurs game, but just before we do, I wanted to just highlight a brilliant shout from Sam on Twitter, who said, "Is Mariano Diaz the answer to all of our prayers?" Obviously at Real Madrid. He says, "How do we have a front three without sacrificing the solidity of our five at the back?" And I think the second part of that question has been answered, but I really enjoyed that he messaged me to say, "Areola could have a word in his ear, and thus survival is insured." And I just really like the idea of Alphonse Areola becoming a football agent for Fulham, as well as being a superhero at the back. Right, we'll be back after the break to talk Spurs. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the Fulhamish podcast, where we are looking ahead to the Spurs game in a couple of days. Now, Spurs are literally playing right now as we record this. So it is 1-0 to them as we speak after Tongo and Ndombele has scored a thunderbolt within about 55 seconds of the game kicking off. But it's a strange little time for Spurs. They lost against Liverpool and then had a little bit of a wobble. And with Fulham in the form that we're in, is there any chance, Lids, that we get something out of this one?
Oh, I mean, it's going to be a very tough ask, isn't it? You know, up against Jose Mourinho, up against Harry Kane and Son, who have been, despite their little bobble recently, you know, are in great form. I think if it is a game that we're looking to, you know, possibly getting something from, it's going to have to be a bit of a smash and grab for me. I don't think we're exactly going to go there and play them off the park. I think it's, you know, I don't know, we could maybe do a Liverpool on them, but I'm just not quite sure about that.
I mean, Dom, to take this, you know, one step further, yes, there are elements of this that are obviously scary given the form that Spurs are in. But you also look at some of their results and you look at them going to Palace and, you know, scraping a win. You look at the last couple of games and actually it's the teams that, you know, who come on to Spurs who have really kind of suffered under this new Parker system. I can't massively see us doing that. And that does suggest that this might be a little bit closer than we perhaps expect.
Yeah, I spoke to one of my Spurs mates and I said, if we approach this in the same way we approached our home game to Liverpool, we'll cause Spurs a lot of problems. Yes, we know we can hit them on the counter-attack. So, yeah, I know they've got some good players, you know, even in defensive areas. But Aurier and Ben Davis are players to be got at. You know, they are players you can get in behind of. And the way Spurs play, they really look for those pockets of space in behind us. And we haven't really been allowing teams to have that space, really. You know, I know. If you look at, you know, Shane Long's offside goal, but he was offside. So therefore,
it
doesn't really count. I mean, even if you look at Liverpool, you know, their goal came because of a dubious penalty decision from a handball from a free kick. You know, we weren't letting...
It's the Callum Wilson one that perhaps scares me the most.
Yeah, exactly. That's the only time that a player has gone in, and you know, if the referee did his job, it wouldn't have been a free kick and not a penalty. We would have won that game probably.
But still, that's not really the point.
Yeah, but no, I don't think we're allowing teams to have this space in behind. I don't think Kane and Son are going to have as much joy as some people might expect them to, who haven't been watching Fulham recently. So I'm confident that we can get something from this game, just because. Especially of how we played against Liverpool. I understand it was a home game as opposed to an away game and there were fans there, obviously the difference that made. But I do think we can get something against it, because it's not like the Spurs team are like untouchable and like unbeatable or anything. Yes, they've got some good players, but if Kane and Son aren't on their day, then that's where Spurs' goals haven't really been coming from too much else. I know, as we spoke about, Tanguy and Ndombele scored today after, what was it, 55 seconds, but you know, their midfield hasn't really been exactly popping up with too many goals. They've been so heavily reliant on Kane and Son, and you know, it took, for a penalty for, you know, the likes of Firmino, Salah and Mane to score against us. So I think if we can limit them attacking-wise, like we did against Liverpool, I am confident that we can get something from this game, and you know, it could potentially be a fifth draw in a row.
Yeah, no, I think that's quite reasonable. Cam, I mean, how would you set us up?
No, I'd agree. I mean, we can't offer Heung-min Son and Harry Kane the space to operate the way that they have done, that kind of fluid, you know, free-formed attack that they have between one another. And I don't think that will happen. And you touched on, obviously, the Callum Wilson scenario, but Newcastle weren't necessarily attacking us in the same way that Tottenham would, and I think we got caught out against Newcastle in that respect. But we're going to be switched on defensively against them. I mean, going forward, they're a real danger, and I'd like to think that we're going to have every player fighting fit for it too, and ready to counteract the way that they move forward so freely. And you know, I think the middle of the park, as it is in the Premier League, is always an area where you have to dominate. And if they're gonna line up with Højbjerg and Winks, I quite fancy Anguissa and Lamina to overpower them. I know that Højbjerg's got a nice bit of physicality about him too, but you know, Anguissa's been indomitable this season, and he's in a complete different class of his own. And I think it's slot quite nicely into their midfield, saying that. And Harry Winks is a cute player. He can offer a lot going forward and slip players in behind. But if you have someone like Lamina just on his tail all the time and snapping away at him, it could really hinder his effect on the game too. And yeah, completely right. I think if we approached them from wide like we did against Liverpool, trying to make things happen along the flanks and put Ben Davies under pressure. If Serge Aurier plays, and he's a real liability in himself to them too. He's been playing quite well recently, but then of course a gaffe a couple of weeks ago just proves that he hasn't really turned the corner, and we need to really stick it on him. So I just think we need to play with a high intensity, but also be aware that we are playing against a very, very reactive side, a Jose Mourinho side, which are ultimately going to attack the game as well. So just be confident, be brave, but be wary. That's all it is.
Lids, on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you for the source matchup of Andre Frank Zambo and Anguissa against Tongi and Ndombele? It's like one of them's trying to flick the ball over the other one always, and the other one's trying to do whirlwind turns, you know, on the floor. It's a hell of a matchup.
It is. It's going to be beautiful. I think. I think what's going to be quite fun about that is that they might actually just try the whole match to outdo each other. So it might be quite fun to watch that. I'd agree with the fact that I think Lamina and Anguissa could, you know, outpar their midfield. So hopefully that's going to happen. I'm hoping we play more like we did against Liverpool than we set up against Man City, because we didn't lay a glove on them at all. So I'm hoping for something a little bit more offensive from Scott, but we'll see.
Yeah, we will indeed. It's a funny one. I mean, Dom, I'm just going to run you through the team you'd start. So I'm going to ask all three of you this, and then we'll probably call this a day. So are you going with any changes, Dom?
I'd bring in the two players who were dropped, essentially. I'd bring in Kearney and Alexander Mitrovic for Ivan Cavallero and Ruben Loftus-Cheek. Because obviously I still aren't aware of what the latest is with Kenny Tete, because his wife just gave birth. But of course, if you take the famous Roy Keane quote, he didn't have the kid, so why is he not playing?
all right, Roy Keane.
But But yeah, I do. I would just bring Mitrovic and Kearney back into the squad just because I didn't think Cavalero and Loftus-Cheek offered any more than they necessarily did in the game. And I think, you know, if we play it more of a 3-4-1-2 as opposed to a 3-4-3, I really think that if we can get the wing backs really bombing on and playing like they did against Liverpool, I really think we can cause them some issues. So yeah, I'd be bringing in Mitrovic and Kearney for this one.
But you'd keep Harrison Reed ahead of Mario Lemina.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that one. I'm not too sure because it's one of those games where we are going to be sitting back, and I think, you know, I maybe sometimes think like Lemina drives forward too much. I think in a game against Newcastle, I think Lemina can be exceptional, and he was. But it's a tough one. But I probably would sit with Harrison Reed, and then I think Lemina is a good player we could bring on for a bit more. A bit more of a combative approach in the second half, possibly.
Cam?
Yeah, more or less the same as Dom. I'd like to see Mitrovic back in the squad. I mean, last time we played Tottenham away in the Premier League, of course, he scored that great goal, which on the end of a 30-odd pass move. I'm not saying that we're going to go out and be a possession team in any means, and, you know, next time we play them. But I'd like to see him back. I'd like to see him play against a top Premier League, a Premier League club, to see how he reacts. And obviously that will be at Caballero's expense. I'd like Lemina to come into the squad. I hear what Dom's saying. Of course, you need to possibly be a bit more reserved and a bit more cautious, but I'd like us to attack the game from the off. And, you know, if we find ourselves 2-0 down, that's when you bring someone like Reed on to shore it up. Also Tom Kearney, of course. I mean, once again, Dom's completely correct in the fact that he needs to play in these games, especially if Mitrovic is playing. The two have a telepathic connection, once they're on the same wavelength with one another. And Ruben Loftus-Cheek, I think he does definitely he needs a little stint on the sideline just to think about how he's going to move on in his career and his immediate future at Fulham as well. Yeah, once again, he's already hit the nail on the head with Kenny Tete. You don't know when he's going to be back. But I don't think anything's broken defensively. So it's the old adage again, why fix it? Especially when BDR's doing so well in that capacity. So those are the changes I'll make. And I'll just go with that.
Liz, I'm going to just posit you I would go 5-3-2. And I would go Anguissa, Lemina and Reed in the middle. I would stodge it up and then go Mitrovic and Loftus-Cheek up top. And I think that, you know, there's something in there to just cause people a little bit of confusion. And I'd just be interested to see your thoughts.
Did you say Mitrovic and Loftus-Cheek up top?
I did, yeah.
Okay, right. Okay, I'm just making sure I was hearing you right. I'm not convinced. I have to say, I'm not convinced. I'm not sure Reid and Lemina would necessarily. I mean, they're pretty much a very similar player. I don't know. I mean, as you say, Loftus-Cheek might work better as a shadow striker, so in which case it might be an absolute stroke of genius. I'm not sure I would go for that. I think neither of them are particularly mobile, and so you'd just be sticking to not very mobile, forward-thinking players up top. If you want to make that call, Jack, that's totally up to you.
Yeah, just one bold thing. Would you make any changes to what Dom and Cam said, Liz?
No, I'm pretty much the same, apart from I would definitely have Lemina on ahead of Reid for this one. Mitrovic and Kearney in ahead of Cav and Loftus-Cheek, and then obviously the Lemina and Reid swap. As I said, I would like to see Kenny Tete back, but, you know, as Dom says, we don't really know what his situation is yet. But as soon as he's fit, I think he needs to come back into the side.
Okie dokie. Dom, we are going to have a preview with a Spurs fan, but it's not going to be on this podcast. So by the time this is out, it may well also be out.
Yeah, So on tomorrow, which will be the Monday, I'll be chatting to Ricky Sachs from Last Word on Spurs. Get a bit of an insight to Spurs' season so far. Have a bit of a chat with him about the game. And yeah, it should be a good one, especially dependent on what the Spurs Wolves games end up finishing tonight. But you know, yeah, in have a little chat about him, sort of the areas that Fulham can damage Spurs on the 30th.
Yeah, and Ricky's a good guy, so well worth your time going and having a listen to that on our YouTube channel. And that is pretty much it for us. There's one thing left to do, Dom, and that's to name this podcast.
So I'm gonna go with one of the earlier ones we sent off Instagram from Kai Martin, and that's Vars a Saint.
Yeah, very, very good. A clever little bit of wordplay, and there's nothing I like more. And all that's left for me to do after that is to say thank you very much to Lydia Campbell.
Thank you, guys.
To Cameron Ramsey.
Pleasure, JC.
And to Dominie Betts.
It's all right.
I've been Jack Collins. This has been Fulhamish Podcast. We'll be back after the Spurs game to break it all down. Happy New Year, Fulham fans. We hope that 2021, it brings a return to the cottage more than anything else, but also peace and prosperity to all of you and yours. Take care. You whites.